You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We told you earlier in the show about Field & Stream. It's in a digital format now, but you really do need to read it. And if you go to fieldandstream.com, you can just go to the current issue. It's the Great Escapes issue. Pay $3.99, and you're going to read an edition of Field & Stream that is every bit as good as the ones you remember in print. With us today to talk about one of those great escapes is T. Edward Nickens. He's the editor-at-large for Field & Stream. He's also the author of a brand new book called The Last Wild Road. That's a collection of stories he has written for Field & Stream over the last 20 years. Eddie, it's great to have you back on the air.
Always a hoot to be with you.
So, your great escape was about an Arizona jackrabbit hunt, which is a really unique hunt. And before we get into it, I guess the first thing I want to do is talk about rabbit hunting. So most rabbit hunters in America, they're after eastern cottontails. You were after antelope jackrabbits. Why don't you describe some of the differences between the two?
The differences are huge. I mean that literally.
Yes.
As well as figuratively. These are possibly the largest lagomorphs on the planet. I'm not a tall guy, but when I picked up an antelope jackrabbit by the tips of its ears, they reached well past my belt buckle.
Wow.
They're huge. They're giant animals. They are so much fun to spot and stalk hunt. It's like a cottontail and a pronghorn, you know, went to a drive-in movie and showed up a few months later with these. They're incredible animals. They are extremely wary. They live in just beautiful, austere country, and they're fine to eat, man. It was a kick, no doubt.
I understand these antelope jackrabbits can reach incredible speeds.
Yeah, they can blister. And thankfully, they don't turn on the afterburners unless they really, really have to. But you figure where they live, they got to get away from coyotes. They got to get away from mountain lions and places, and certainly historically. So they can burn it up. Now, they'll typically start off with a little loping gait, you know, and when you can cover that kind of ground with 4 feet, they don't have to burn it up. But, man, once they go, they go, and you've got no choice but to pull your rifle down and just enjoy the show.
Let's talk about what time of year this hunt took place and where this hunt took place in Arizona.
Yeah, so we were hunting in the winter. It was in early February when we were there, winter being the coolest time of year in the Sonoran Desert. But it was still pretty warm during the day, you know, a couple of days, short sleeves while we were stalking at night, nice and cool weather. Exactly where we were hunting, we were precisely between Tucson and Mexico City in terms of our exact location. You know, these animals range widely, and they're on huge private ranches. They're on big expanses of public land. Hunting in Arizona, my hunting buddy was Jonathan O'Dell, who's the small game biologist for Arizona. So we were hunting on public lands, open to the public for hunting, for camping, which is what we did, which is a lot of fun. A really big positive to this trip was the fact we got to camp out in the desert.
Sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah, super cool. You know, riding ranch roads, riding, you know, public county roads to get to places where we would spot and stalk. It's kind of like hunting pronghorns, you know, during the breeding season. You get to a good place, and you capitalize, and you glass, and you walk, and you look, and man, it's a hoot.
Eddie, you alluded to some of the hunting you were doing with these jackrabbits. I was really taken, though, with your morning hunts. You know, you'd camp out in the desert overnight. You'd eat breakfast, shoulder a day pack with some water, I'm sure. And why don't you talk about the morning hunts for these jackrabbits?
Yeah, the morning hunts were super cool. You know, the sun is coming up over that low, flat desert. And what happens is when it backlights a bunny, the ears glow, two orange popsicles. And so it's crazy when you first see it, and you don't really know what's going on, but then you really start to key in on the rabbit's ears. And even when that doesn't happen, in the morning, these animals are sort of tucked into dense vegetation, or they got their butts up against a tree, sort of digest what they've eaten as they feed, mostly during the night, my understanding is. And so you're stalking, and you're looking, and you've got this search image in your head of this big old rabbit kind of scrunched down up against a creosote or a cactus. And That's what you're looking for, because if you don't see that, what you see is the back end of a rabbit going really, really fast. So you try to catch a sight of them before that happens.
Speaking of the cactus, you know, I think people think of southern Arizona and they always think of those classic big cactus. Is that what they were hanging out with, or was it different cactus? And I also understand you got to get very up close and personal with some cactus, too.
I did indeed, you know, and being a southern boy, I pride myself on being able to handle briars and stickers and all that kind of unpleasantries. But yeah, it was another world out there. I mean, you ask about what kind of cactus, I'll tell you, all of them, all at once. Actually, you know, the big saguaros were a little bit of a rarity where we were, but you know, the cholla cactus, lots of these prickly pear, just, I don't know, you know, I would just call them either dang cactus or stupid cactus or blip, blip, blip cactus if I had to name them, but they were everywhere. Yeah, and I had one really funny episode where I got stuck in the foot and reached down. I got stuck in the hand. And, you know, you get briar in your hand when you're bunny hunting. Back home in the South, you just pull it out with your teeth.
No.
So it was a up close, personal, and kind of painful was my experiences with the cactus. Although there was one, and Jonathan told me about this one cactus, and I was eating the flowers and snacking on the flowers. I don't remember which one it was. That was kind of cool.
That is cool. Let's talk about jackrabbits as table fare. This was really a fascinating part to me in your story. You had some really interesting tidbits about how jackrabbits really made up diets for a lot of folks during the Depression, and how Jack O'Connor, one of the most famous hunting and shooting writers in the world, subsisted on jackrabbits for a time.
Yeah, Jack O'Connor was sort of known as the dean of long-range rifle shooting, and he cut his teeth shooting, sniping these jackrabbits in this very region where we were hunting. And they make the great table food. Jonathan O'Dell is one of the country's, literally one of the country's best wild game cooks. And he cooked rabbits in black iron skillet. He cooked jackrabbits in a hole in the ground. I don't know how he couldn't cook a jackrabbit. And they were absolutely delicious. And let me tell you, that big old rabbit is a big old pot of meat. And that's what helped a lot of these farmers and old ranching families get by in the Dust Bowl days and the Great Depression. Communities would have jackrabbit drives, which is exactly what you think it is, where they'd line up across the landscape and walk these things down because that was about the only thing they had to eat.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Folks, again, you got to check out this article. It's in the Great Escapes edition. That's the current edition of Field & Stream. And you can go to fieldandstream.com and just go to where the magazine is. It's digital now. It's not print anymore. Just pay $3.99. You can read all of the story and lots of other great ones. Before we go, though, I want to talk about your new book. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about The Last Wild Road?
Hey, for sure. And thanks for asking about that. The Last Wild Road just hit bookshelves in mid-May. Doing well. Gotten a lot of great reviews, a lot of good love from the industry. It's a collection of, for the best of my work in Field & Stream, over the last 18 years. So we've got about 30 of my shorter essays, the Total Outdoorsman essays in there, and another 30 long features from Alaska to every part of the continent. I'm super excited about the book. It's a beautiful cover. And yeah, hope folks check it out. The Last Wild Road, available at Amazon, big bookstores, little bookstores, online, you name it.
Well, I'm certainly going to be picking it up because, Eddie, you are truly one of America's favorite writers when it comes to fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. And I love your adventures, and I'd like to thank you for sharing this one with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Always happy to be here, John.